What's up, everybody? Today is August 7th, 2024, and I am here with, from the other side of the world, Hamoudi Hassan in New Zealand. What's up, Hamoudi?
What's up, man? How are you doing, brother?
Fantastic. What time is it there?
8 a.m. now.
8 a.m. on Thursday,
I think,
right?
We live in the future.
You are in the future. Hamoudi's in the future. I am in the past. It is 4 o'clock here. So I really appreciate we had to work this out because I think you're 16 hours ahead of us. And then tomorrow morning, I actually have to talk to, do you know Anna James over in Australia?
Anna James? No.
Are you familiar with her? She owns Inked, I-N-K-D.
Oh, yes.
So tomorrow morning, so I already did a podcast with her, but we're doing a part two because I haven't released it because she's got this story that I really want to hear and we weren't able to get it the first time.
Oh, nice.
So the reason I'm bringing that up is because I'm talking to you right now, 4 o'clock, and then tomorrow I got to be back here at 6 o'clock in the morning so I could talk to her. You know what I mean?
Because I think, they're behind us two hours, I believe.
Yeah, she's 14 hours ahead and you're 16 hours ahead.
Yeah.
So I saw one thing, Hamoudi. So one thing I noticed about you, I'm looking at your Instagram. I always stalk everyone's Instagram right before I talk to them. And you have one of the cleanest Instagrams. You think all your pictures are clean, meaning there's no distractions all over the place, looking all crazy. It's very clean pictures. They're very high resolution. Everything is like perfect. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, I hope our thumbnail makes it on this page when I do a clip of this.
I mean, that's the kind of style I really wanted to go for. I believe I saw somebody overseas in Sweden. I can't remember the name. I came across it once and I was like, yes, this is very clean. And I wanted to do something, where it's not really distracting for clients.
It makes sense. I mean, it's very clean. It's very, very clean. And your work is great too, by the way, for everyone listening.
Thanks, really good. I appreciate it.
I saw you recently were training with Yusuf from Joe SMP. Were you trainer? What were you guys doing there? What happened there?
So before I left, actually, because I used to speak to him quite often, now and then, always get advice. And I guess it was something that I said, oh, maybe in the future I'll run into him. And as I'm, New Zealand's a bit small, so it's very hard to like get educational and trying to expand and learn more because we don't really have a big community except Australia. But it's like you kind of have to go there or they come here, but the timing's always different. But I really wanted to go to Dubai. I don't know, something like always intrigued me to go there. And I've spoke to Sam from Oliver Mayer. So he owns a studio there in Dubai. And then we spoke back and forth. He's like, hey, man, why don't you just come out here in Dubai and give it a crack, see what you think? And I was like, man, I've been manifesting this and it's coming true. So I ended up, booking a ticket ahead and I was like planning everything. And when I went there, Joe was there at the same time. And I was like, well, this is a coincidence. We're there at the same place at the same studio. I was like, this cannot be happening. But it was great actually meeting him in real life, man. The guy is so humbled, sharing his skill. And as as an artist, sometimes people kind of gatekeep things. They don't really want to, because that's their signature move. But this guy was just like literally, I like shocked him. I was watching him like nonstop for 2 weeks straight working beside him. And eventually we came up with a team. He's like, hey, why don't we create a team here in Dubai and us three do something where, this will be one of our bases. We go, he's in America from Michigan. I'm from New Zealand. Sam lives in Dubai. And then like every probably two times a year, we go meet there and get clients. And I was like, cool. But yeah, since I've been back, man, I've been getting quite a lot of inquiries now, booking people for December when I go back. So the market's pretty good there. People still getting to know what SMP is as well, which is great. And you got the whole GCC countries as well. So you got like Saudi, Oman, Qatar. Those places don't have SMP. So they're traveling to Dubai to get SMP done.
And to touch on that, so for those who don't know, Joe SMP Yusuf, he's a fucking beast. He is a monster. He is so fucking good. And he's only 30. Like, I just saw, did you see his birthday was recently? He's only 30 years old. I'm like, holy shit, dude.
Yeah, when I was there, and then he was like, oh, I'm 29. I was like, damn, I'm older than you.
How old are you?
But man, I'm 33.
33, okay, I'm 36.
Yeah.
But I have a question about, so that's a congrats on getting more clients over in the Dubai. It looks awesome. Cheers, in Dubai. Man. It also looks really hot. And my fear about going to Dubai is that I do something stupid and get myself in trouble, right? Because they're pretty strict over there with some of the their rules. Yeah, and I'd be a little on edge. And I know Mark Allen from Creative Scalps goes out there a lot too. I think he actually opened a shop there. But here's my question. Because most people, I'd say predominantly, are Muslim out there, right? So I've had interactions here where I had a guy who was Muslim. He comes in. He's like, is that a tattoo? And I say, it's not a tattoo. It's scalp micropigmentation. It's similar to a tattoo. Mm. Some of them are like, cool, okay, I'll get it. Some of them are like, I can't. Now, how does that impact, business over there? Did that happen at all?
That kind of started when I spoke to the owner of the owner there. So he was having trouble. He's from the UK, you know. He's been living in Dubai for 2 years, and so we spoke to some of those the guys at the mosque and stuff like that. So they said if it's not something to show off, like, you know, a normal tattoo, which sometimes people design it and just to like show, and if it's just for look and appearance and confidence, then it's not haram. That's what we say. So they passed that by, you know, looking into it more. And since that happened, yeah, a lot of people, I mean, you still have those guys still on the edge who are very, you know, Islamic, very straight. Like, I'm Muslim myself. But then you got guys who are fully, fully strict. So they kind of stand behind that. But then you got guys who are very open-minded, like myself, you know, like I've got tattoos and, you know, but I'm still, you know, I'm still Muslim. I don't go around and say, oh, this and that. But yeah, there's a lot of open-minded people there. And to be honest, since I went there, the last time I've been there, I was real young. So I never really experienced Dubai for what it is. But since I went back now, it's very multicultural, very open-minded, you know, everyone doing their own thing. So the place is growing. It's amazing. And the safety is crazy. But like you said, there are laws in place that you cannot really do things.
That's great news. That's really good news to hear. So basically what you're telling me is, okay, so if I'm not getting a big dragon tattoo, which I have, but if you know what I mean, if you're not going to be all flashy, then it's okay. It's accepted because you're just trying to, hey, I just want to get my self-confidence back. I want to reframe my face, restore my hairline, whatever the case is. They're cool with that. That's really good news. I'm going to definitely use that in my future encounters. Thank you.
Yeah. So there was a video as well, which I actually need to upload, probably translate it into English, where they actually had the interview with one of the guys from the mosque, where they actually interviewed him on live. He was on live TV, so somebody called him up, and he was trying to get SMP as well. And then when he got the okay from it, the student went. So it kind of opened up the door for us as well as Muslims and other Muslims that coming into and trying to get SMP. And I can tell you, man, it's the amount of boldness in Dubai, and it's crazy because their water is so bad. So a lot of people end up getting bold. And that has affected on them as well because they're getting a lot of hair transplants. And I could not tell you the amount of failed hair transplant I saw there. It's crazy.
So a few things there. One, I wanted to touch. So the water, isn't it crazy that the water, you're saying they have bad water, and I'm assuming because it's a desert, right? So it's very scarce. Correct. They're probably getting some imported. But isn't it wild how we have so much technology? They're right next to an ocean. How can we not figure out how to take ocean water, you know, take the salt out, take out all the bad stuff, and keep the good, fresh, cleaning water, you know, in bulk, you know, in a large quantity, in volume?
Yes.
Why can't we do that yet?
I mean, I believe it would eventually happen. As you can see, you know, technology is moving so fast now. So I reckon between, you know, some stage, somebody will come and create something. But I guess that comes down to like probably politics and stuff like that. They, you know, money makers.
Yeah, because then the people who control the water, right? The people who control the fresh drinking water are like, we can't let them have free fucking water all the time.
Losing business now.
Yeah, for just like oil, right? Just like oil. The oil companies don't want the electric because that takes money away from the oil business.
For sure.
Dubai looks amazing. I could probably be on my best behavior just to visit. Looks really hot. I saw they had a crypto conference there. A couple. Do you follow any of the crypto stuff, the Bitcoin, Ethereum, and stuff?
I'm
like
a heavy
that?
Investor in Bitcoin.
Oh, good for you! Fuck yeah! It's rough right now. Bro. It's rough right now.
Yeah. It's the when you buy, when no one's talking about it.
Yeah. But there was that big Bitcoin conference over, I think it was probably about a month ago, and there was it rained like 2 feet or something like that. Did you see that?
Yeah. They had the flood. Yeah, they had the flooding there. It was crazy. But to be honest, as a country there, they're very quick, man. Like, they cleaned the whole streets, everything, just within no time. It's crazy how the place is so developed with a shorter period of time.
Do you think it's because, I mean, it's probably my theory. I'll tell you my theory, Hamoudi. Basically, Saudi Arabia those are like probably the richest people in the world because they're richer than Elon Musk. They're richer than the Rothschilds. They got all the Saudi Arabians, all the oil money, but they don't have to publicly disclose how much money they have. Right.
Yeah.
They basically kind of own Dubai, right? They just build shit there, but they don't technically own it. I don't know. That's how I kind of see it.
I think, because the Saudi Arabia, man, it's crazy. I went there actually while I was in Dubai. I went there.
Did you?
That country, I mean, it's going to take a long time to develop because it's real big compared to Dubai. But the way they're moving, at the speed they're going at, I mean, probably they said within 2030 or 35, something crazy going to happen there. And I think it's great because it's these countries are developing so fast and they want to attract a lot of people, give them a lot of benefit. I mean, the safety in Dubai was crazy, man. Like, I've never seen a place that safe before, except Taiwan when I went there.
Really, Taiwan?
I love that place. It's probably the cleanest place I've ever been to.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Did you see that thing that they're building out? I think it's in Saudi Arabia or maybe it's Dubai. One of those places.
I think
it's equivalent to 100 miles, but they're cut short and it's supposed to be this whole city. On the outside, it's mirrors and it's like a futuristic city all inside, four stories high, in the middle of the desert, all self-sufficient, like an aircraft carrier, which they're also building an aircraft carrier that looks like a giant turtle. Did you see that thing too?
I'm telling you, man, these guys living in the future. Literally,
they got the money too, right? To build the shit.
They got the money. I say money talks, bullshit walks, you know?
So what was your experience? Why did you end up going to Saudi Arabia? You just went to visit for a day or two?
I went to Mecca, actually. I went to Mecca. Yeah, that was on my wish list for, I don't know, since I was very, very young, you know, and it happened so quick. And I ended up there and I was like, wow, it was an amazing experience. Yeah, something that it's different. It's hard to describe to people and to, like, you know, whoever's Muslim or anybody can go and feel it themselves.
That's where is that referred to as like the Holy Land? I know what you're talking about.
The Holy Land, yeah, correct.
Yeah, I've seen videos of there. A lot of people go there. A lot of people. And everyone's always dressed really nice.
Oh, man, it's packed. Yeah.
Was it worth it? Did you have fun?
Oh, I enjoyed it, man. I went by myself. You know, everything. It went so smooth. It's crazy. They built a train all the way from the airport down there. The train, which they never had before. So it was like, boom, direct, doing that speed train, which was a nice experience. I've never been on one before.
So how long did it take from the airport to get to the Mecca?
1 hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was just straight So it's quite far, obviously, in train if you're going to drive there. But yeah, it was direct, man. 1 hour and you were there. And the whole city, Mecca there, where the holy place is, just AC everywhere. And as soon as you leave, it's hot, man. That place is hot. Like, literally, it's so hot.
But I mean, are you used to the heat being in New Zealand?
Oh, well, it doesn't really get too hot here. Even if it does, the sun here is different because we don't have ozone layers. So it actually burns you. Like, you feel like you're getting burnt. And that's the downside about New Zealand's summer. It's nice at times, but if you're staying out in the sun for too long, nah, man, it's definitely going to, you can feel it's burning you. It's not a nice heat. And the winters are cold.
Okay. And is there mountains in New Zealand too?
Oh man, for sure. If you go to be honest, you see, like every time I come from the airport to New Zealand, I run into a lot of Americans. And the first thing I say, I'm like, are you guys going to Queenstown? They say, like, yeah, we're going there. Queenstown, I think it's one of the most beautiful places on earth. That's where, you know, a lot of The Ring as well being done and some other movies. It's all on those places.
Oh, that's where they film Lord of the Rings? I didn't know
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That one and Wellington as well. So those places are being filmed. That's where Lord of the Ring was being filmed.
My friend Brian.
Like Queenstown, man, it's crazy.
That's the tourist area, right?
Oh, like it's unreal. Like even pictures cannot do satisfaction there.
I've seen them. They have the bungee jumping out there too, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bungee jumping, speedboats. It's a very touristic place. So you go out there and experience all the, you know, jet boats and all that stuff. But it's an amazing place. Probably a couple of days there, then that's it. You don't want to overdo it.
Oh, I'd love to go to New Zealand. It looks amazing. It looks amazing. The furthest I've been out was Hawaii. How far is Hawaii from New Zealand?
Oh, no, that's far.
Is it?
That's more close to you guys.
Well, I'm on the East Coast. Oh, I guess you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's more close to you guys. No, New Zealand's super fast. We're close to Antarctica. That's why it's cold here, man. Yeah, yeah.
I also noticed, I as I was looking through your Instagram, you did the videos with River the Barber. And so for those of you who don't know, I had randomly seen this guy, River the Barber,
I'll tell you a story about it, but yeah.
he looks, I mean, he dresses like a 1920s mob boss, early 1900s mob boss, and he looks great. He looks great. He's got a full head of hair. He's got a couple face tattoos, but he's, you know, his style, and he's really went pretty viral, not really talking, just showing his different looks.
Yeah, yeah.
And I liked it. So how did that happen? How'd you link up with him?
So I used to, my previous background, obviously in sales, and I've done so many jobs, and then I got into barbering. So I was barbering for about 13 years.
Oh, okay.
And River used to work for me. Yeah. So River used to work for me. So he was one of my colleagues. He worked for me for about 4 years. And the guy, man, like, he went through a rough patch in life and whatnot, you know, obviously with his dad in there. But so the way he came out of it was, it's crazy, you know. Obviously, he's Christian, you know, found Jesus, Lord, and went to church and stuff. So he became so, like, really into his faith and belief. When I sold my businesses, obviously him and the other guy left because they didn't want to work for the other dude that owned the business. So we kind of all went separate ways. And then he ended up moving to the city, working there. And then, yeah, one day he decided the barber needed a bit of a nice look because the area is very business area. Everyone suits and stuff. So he just started getting into it, and then before you knew it, this guy just blew up within a couple of months. His thing just skyrocketed, and he goes, "Man, a lot of my followers are actually from America and Mexico, apparently." So he's got a lot of people from Mexico.
So he used to be your coworker, or you were like manager there or something, and he worked.
No, I used to own the businesses. I used to have two shops.
Oh shit. Oh, okay. We'll go into that. So you own two barbershops. He worked for you. And then after you guys split, he moves to the city and he's like, I'm gonna change my style, and he fucking blows up.
He changed his whole life, man. I can tell you. This guy went from this person that he didn't really know where he was going, what he wanted to do, to this person that he just went boom, social media influence. And but he's a very creative guy. He's on that creative side because he was a rapper as well. So like, you know, like they're always very creative in what they actually do in their craft. And he's an amazing barber as well, you know, like really, really good. And kind of combined those two, and then he just blew up. Like, I've never seen an Instagram blow up like within a couple of months, you know?
Yeah, I think he's over 500,000.
Yeah, I think he's going close to 600 now. Wow. So I believe he'll reach 1 million. Yeah, once he reaches 1 million, this guy is super famous. Probably potentially be in a movie, I believe.
Oh, good for him. Good for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you were like, hey, but so you just hit him up. You're like, we want to do this like photo shoot style thing.
Well, I can come to that as well. I was I used to do modeling quite a bit, and then it got too much. I didn't really like it. I was doing it in Bali, and it wasn't for me. It was fun at the time. I was like, oh, this is cool, but it wasn't something that I was like, oh, I want to do this for a career or something like that. But I came that modeling, something beautiful came out of it. I ended up on a dating show over in Spain.
Fuck yeah.
So that's how it kind of all happened. And then, but me and River, like, we're real good friends still. Anytime I message him, he's like, man, you should start another modeling page so we can start doing more. I was like, nah, man, I'm focusing on what I'm doing now. I don't want no distractions or all the other stuff in the way.
That's great. So what was it like on the, not the modeling show, on the dating show? How'd you do on that? What was it?
Yeah, fuck, it was cool, man. I think one of the best experiences of my life, to be honest. It was held by MTV, and then it was on Paramount Plus. So it's an American host show. It's called Are You the One Global Edition.
Okay.
It was season 9, and it was crazy, man. We had internationals from all over the world, people from America, UK, Australia, Ireland, and it was, what an experience being with 22 people in a villa for a whole month.
It was one of those type shows. It wasn't just like meet and greet and go out.
It's like Love Island. You're in this place together with these people. Yeah, yeah.
We got to pull up a clip. Can we find a clip of that?
Oh, yeah, you can go on YouTube, bro. It's all over there.
All right, Kira, when you're editing, find a clip of that. We will find that clip. We'll find a clip. So how did you do? Did you meet anyone? Did you have fun? Was there voting people and shit like that?
Yeah, so what happens is like basically finding your match. You talk to these different girls, and then you go into this booth, and then it kind of scans you, does this whole thing, and it tells you if you're a match or not. And if you're not a match, you can go back out to the villa and obviously kind of have to find your match. The girl that I'm with now, she was not my match on the show, but we've been together for like 2 years now, almost 2 years, yeah.
Congrats.
So I met her on the show, and we've been together since ever. So she's Dutch.
What? So you, the girl you're currently dating, you met on the show?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we've been
together. And you're still together?
2 years. Yeah.
So this was in what, 2021, 2022 you did this?
Yeah, 21, 22.
Semi-recent. Wow. Oh, we got to pull this up. We got to pull this up. This is great. I didn't expect this.
Yeah. It's crazy because even now when I go play football with my friends, you know, because I used to play semi-pro football.
And, soccer. For the Americans.
And the other day, my coach, he goes, oh, what's this? And I was like, what's that? And I was like, oh, God, where'd you get this from?
Oh, somehow
it popped up. He pulled out, yeah. So everyone was like, what? Were you on the show? And I was like, yeah, I don't really talk about it, you know.
Wow. Wow. So that's cool. Did they give you any money? Just curious. Or was it all just...
Yeah, so we ended up winning $750,000 towards the end. It gets split up between everyone was there.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Did they tax the shit out of you?
No. So it was like already, I think it was taxed or not, but it worked out in my favor because exchange rate, US dollars to New Zealand.
Oh, you got even more.
Yeah, because dollars are obviously a lot stronger.
Yeah,
American
yeah.
dollar.
I don't know how long that's going to last, though, buddy.
Yeah, I don't know what's everything happening in this world. You know, this digital currency and everywhere where it's going. It's I don't know.
It's bad. I mean, it's bad.
It's so bad.
I have a concern, and for people listening, when I talk about cryptocurrency versus digital currency, it's two different things, right? Because cryptocurrency is one thing. Like, what, I don't think in the future we're ever going to pay with Bitcoin. I'm not going to buy things with Bitcoin, because what Michael Saylor said, I'm sure you know who Michael Saylor is.
Michael Saylor says
it's like owning real estate in Times Square in the 1920s. It's just going to keep going up and up and up in value. But with digital currency, what they might do, which we hope they don't, we got to keep cash around, is then they can, we're only going to buy everything digital. So that means if the government doesn't like what you said or something you did or whatever the case might be, they'll cancel you out. They'll lock you. We cannot have that. We can't have that.
I think some countries, to be honest, are way, way behind towards that, you know. I've traveled quite a lot. So some countries are like way behind. You're like, man, no way that digital currency is going to catch up to these guys anytime soon. I think it's probably like, like future places. Potentially there will be. But yes.
We got to hold off. We got to hold off.
I just hold Solana and Bitcoin.
Oh, nice. I got Solana too. I got Solana, Ethereum, Bitcoin are my main. And then I got a bunch of altcoins. I got Shiba. I'm hoping it's going to be the next, oh my God, I'm having a brain fart. What was the one Elon Musk talked about that blew up?
Dogecoin. Dogecoin, yeah, that kind of, every time he tweets something, man, that thing just pumps.
I still regret not buying the Dogecoin, because I saw the day that he said something, like he was just fucking around on Twitter. He was like, haha, we're going to use Dogecoin. I was like, man, I should buy it. And then I'm talking to my friends and people and a mentor, and he's like, it's not a real crypto. It's just some bullshit altcoin. They call them shitcoin. I'm like, I know, but Elon talked about it, which means it's going to go up. He's like, no, it's not. So I didn't, because you couldn't easily buy it on Coinbase. You have to do what you got to get on all these other apps. And what, you know, a month later, the shit hit like 73 cents. I'm like, oh my God.
I'm on Brett at the moment, and Brett is going crazy at the moment. And I think once that goes on Coinbase and Binance, this thing will probably skyrocket as well.
What's the, let me write that down. It's called, BRIT?
BRETT. Brett. And the thing is, you have to buy it on Ethereum base. So it's like the same as Dogecoin. You couldn't just buy it off Coinbase or Binance. Yeah, so, but I believe potentially if it goes on Binance and Coinbase, this thing could skyrocket. I think it's only at 0.0014 at the moment, or 0.014. So it's real, real. And I know a lot of people are on it in Dubai. Yeah, I know some big, big fellas are got a lot of money in it.
and it's just Brett coin. But I mean, is how I would.
BRETT.
Huh. I'm definitely going to check it out. Yeah, I got
that.
I got the Shiba. I got the dog with hat. You know, I bought that dumbass coin. I'll just put $100 in one of these stupid coins.
Yeah, because you just never know. You know, high risk, high reward.
Yeah.
A lot of people got rich from shit coins anyway. So
exactly,
we could be one of those.
Please. I think about it all the time. I mean, I think about crypto. I'm sure you think about crypto every day too. And I think about you know how I'm always thinking in my head, like, what if one of these altcoins, one of these shit coins blows up and I make, you know, or everyone invested makes a lot of money. And part of me is like, that means everybody will get rich. But the more you talk to people, most people are not invested in stocks, let alone cryptocurrency. You would think there'd be more, but there's really not.
I think it all comes down to actually education, and that's what it is. You know, like if you actually think back in the days, you know, people were like trading, you know, services for services, and things changed, and as life evolved, and I think there was a quote: if you're not involved, you get left behind. And that's what a lot of people happen. It's because they don't want to change, and I think that's why it's called the 1% in this world, because they think different. When you think different and you have this belief in your mind, like, hey, I'm going to be, yeah, it might not happen, but as long as you believe and tell your brain that is this gonna happen, hey, it will happen. It's all about your subconscious and how you train it. And I think that's some, a lot of people lack into that because they get distracted with social media, life, you know, all these other things that they like, oh, I don't really care about my investment, or I don't really care about my future. That's why I like to listen to Dave Ramsey. I don't know if you follow
him. I know Dave, of course.
Like, I love watching that guy, man. Every time he makes it so simple, but a lot of people don't really follow what he says.
So I completely agree with you. I mean, I love Dave Ramsey. I love David Goggins. I love Tony Robbins, Eric Thomas, Grant Cardone, all these people. Yeah. Ed Milet. I look up to all these guys. You know, you can learn a lot. Zig Ziglar.
I have this book.
Yeah, yeah. Think, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. If you've never read that book, it's one of the best.
Read that like three times now, man.
So have I. I listen to it. I listen to it. Yeah. You know, it changes
every time. But to be honest, the best guy that I like and I listen to every time, I could never get sick of him, is Jim Rohn.
Oh, that's Tony's mentor. Tony Robbins' mentor was Jim Rohn. Yeah.
I think everybody that coming out now and speaking, if you actually listen to Jim Rohn, they're all kind of taking his stuff and then trying to add a little bit of flavor. Exactly.
Jim Rohn was the Tony Robbins back in the day. And correct. Then Tony blew up, and now one of my good friends, shout out to Fred Melchior. He works for Tony Robbins. He's been the number one salesman for, I guess, since 2012. And so crazy. I've got to learn so much about that and see a lot of the inside stuff, which is really cool. I even went to 10 years ago, 2014, and went to San Antonio, Texas to Unleash the Power Within, which was amazing. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, Tony Robinson, it's crazy, man. Like, I think he just teaches people the belief and changing their mindset. And that's what I think a lot of those aspirational guys, public speakers and stuff, is just they're trying to reprogram people's minds by making them think like you need to believe it, what you actually do, or stuff like that. But a lot of people, you know, they just don't really want to. And if you don't want to, it's you, no one else. I can give you the formula, but if you don't want to put it into action, it's up to you. Like, it cannot hold your hand, you know? And I was actually listening to Jim Rohn today in the gym, and he was saying, he's like, we could have this conference here, and everybody in this conference could leave, and one says, you know what, I'm going to change my life today, and then the other person could say, oh, I've listened to these stuff before. So it's all up to you.
It's about taking massive action, right?
Correct, man.
If you don't take action, yeah, you can listen to it. You'd be like, yeah, this is great, this is good shit. But if you go home and you do the same things you were doing before and kept the same habits, your life's not going to change. Everybody thinks because you're listening to a motivational speaker or some person with a lot of experience and advice, they're not going to change it for you. You have to change. Yeah. You have to put in the work. You have to be willing to do whatever it takes.
That's the whole purpose of it, you know. And I think change is hard, don't get me wrong. You know, when you're trying to break those habits, it's not something, it's like telling a smoker, stop quitting tomorrow. He's like, going to be like, who the hell are you telling me? What? You know, it's like, it's up to them to like either ease slowly and get out of it and change their habits, or you don't. I mean, my biggest inspirational person was my sister. She introduced me to this awakening, you know. Before I was, man, party animal, doing all this dumb shit. Like, people that used to read books, I'm like, well, what are these guys up to, you know? But then here, later on, 4 years later, I'm doing the same thing.
Wow. So let's get into where did you grow up?
So my original background is from Iraq.
You're from Iraq?
Yeah, yeah. So, wow. From Iraq, yeah.
And when did you move to New Zealand?
2003, I believe, because we were refugees in Indonesia.
But meaning what? 3 years.
So it means we left Iraq as asylum seekers, you know, smuggled through to other countries to get to. So our original plan was to go to Australia.
Okay.
But that didn't happen because you have to go through Iraq, Jordan, Malaysia, and you end up in Indonesia. And then from Indonesia, you leave on the boats to Australia. which that never happened for us because we got caught and arrested and stayed in jail for 6 months.
Your whole family?
Whole family, yeah. So me, my mom, our brothers and sisters. And I had a younger brother who passed away there in jail.
I'm sorry, man.
That was like, it's all good, man. It was crazy for what, like, we went through the whole process, you know. And then the United Nations came. And then they're like, oh, because United Nations comes and accept certain families to certain countries. That's how that kind of works. And then we got accepted to America, actually. But then 9/11 happened, so they canceled the visa. Iraq, you know, so it's like, yeah. And eventually, you know, New Zealand, they said New Zealand accepted you guys. We're like, where the hell is that? And we didn't realize it was close to Australia. So yeah, that's how we kind of ended up here.
Did you guys flee Iraq before the invasion?
Yeah, before the war. So 1998. We left.
And what was the reason? What was the logic? I mean, were you guys in a bad situation? Was it something?
Oh, it was just the war. Remember the war, like the whole America war in Iraq started.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, my mom was just like, no, there will be no future for us in Iraq, you know. And my dad was like, oh, but she's like, no, I'm taking the kids and I'm leaving. Either you coming or I'm going, you know. So yeah, within like not even a week or so, we ended up selling our house for like peanuts, you know, like now if you think about how much it's worth, but yeah, because we were living in a real nice area.
Like Tehran?
And so we stayed in Basra. So one of the streets in Basra is one of the most expensive streets now because, you know, house prices, everything skyrocketed.
Uh-huh.
And then yeah, my dad ended up selling it for like nothing just so we can get out. And then we ended up, yeah, leaving. But our family, cousins and all that, they're still there. But, you know, they said they should have left with us. But, hey, you know, that's life. I guess sometimes you either take action or you stay where you are.
So your mom saw the writing on the wall and she was like, let's get.
Yeah, man. She just said, we're leaving. Don't know where, but we're leaving. That's what it was. Yeah.
So what was it like getting smuggled? Like, what? So walk me through. How did that happen?
Yeah, man, it's crazy. I was 10 years old, you know. I still remember everything. Sometimes you get flashbacks when when things. So we ended up leaving Iraq, going to Jordan. You know, one of our dad friends said, hey, come to Jordan, see if you guys like it. And then, so we ended up going to Jordan, staying there for about a month. And then my dad met somebody else. He goes, oh, there are ways to get to Australia. For us, it was like, oh, Europe, you know. That's what we think it was, Australia. We ended up obviously paying this guy to take us to Australia. So they had to take us to Malaysia first. And then when we got to Malaysia, that person that said, oh, they're going to take us to Australia, took our money, robbed our money. So we were like, the thing is, when you're in these places, you cannot speak the language. You cannot speak English. You can like, you're like basically, you know, deaf, silent. So you kind of like, have to find your ways. But somehow we met some family there who were in the same situation as us, so we ended up staying with them. And eventually we met some other dude who took us to Indonesia. And when we got to Indonesia, there was a lot of refugees like us, you know, that wants to leave, that left, you know, from Syria, from Afghanistan, from Pakistan, all different nationalities. They were all at one place. And some people took the risk, you know, going onto these boats to Australia. And a lot of them sank, actually. You know, there was a lot of people dying. So many, like, it's crazy. Because to get to Australia, you have to go through 3 days in the ocean. You're in the middle of the ocean for 3 days in these dinghies, boats, you know. Like,
yeah, I imagine you're not on a luxury cruise line.
No, you're not, no. And then they put people in there, for about 200 people in there, you know.
They pack it full.
It's like,
right?
So they pack it up, you know, and they don't tell you what it looks like because they make you go out at nighttime, and when you get there, you're like, okay, shit, cannot turn back now. So they end up taking their risk, and we were gonna go on these boats a couple of times, but my brother, man, he was just crying like crazy. So my mom was like, no, this is a bad idea. So on the second time, that's when we got caught by the Indonesian Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they put us in jail, man, 6 months. And from then they let us out because the United Nations came and whatnot, helping us out. So, but we ended up staying in Indonesia for about 3 years before we went to New Zealand.
So when you say that your family was put in jail in Indonesia, was it, did they have like a big, I imagine they called a lot of people, right? Not just you. And so
it
wasn't like a traditional, like you're going to like prison because you murdered someone, right? Was it a big, I guess, camp?
It was like a big camp. Yeah, it was a big camp. And obviously gates and everything, like you could not just leave. Get out, you know, you're stuck there. But yeah, there was a lot of families, man. A lot of families there.
And where did you sleep? Did they have roofs?
Bunks,
did you have shelter?
Beds, man. It was like this big hole. People sleeping next to each other.
Did they feed you? Like, how did you guys get food and everything?
So they were feeding us their food, but we couldn't eat it because we're not used to that type of food. You know, it's a completely like 360. You're going from like, say, you know, eating tabbouleh in there to like KFC and you're like, what the hell is this? You know, so that's how it was. But eventually they let us start cook and make our own food. So they're like, you know what, we'll give you guys the ingredients, you cook your own food. Made it easier for them.
Yeah,
and that's how it kind of started, because no one wanted to eat that food. It was but I don't even know what it was, but eventually we did, you know, like I didn't really mind it.
And
when you're young, you gotta eat.
Yeah, you gotta eat. Yeah. And so you're about what, 9, 10? How old are you during this time?
Yeah, about 10.
Okay, so you're 10 years old. I mean, are they all in this prison camp? Were there schools, or how did you occupy
your
time?
Three years, man. 3 years, no school.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so like it was basically my mom was educating us. That's it, because her background was an accountant.
Oh, okay.
So she was just educating us as we go, you know. I think I became so good at maths. Not anymore. So it was like, yeah, that's the only thing I could study was maths.
And that's good. That's a good skill to have.
Yeah.
And so do you speak Farsi?
No, I speak Arabic.
Arabic, okay. And and English, and do you speak anything else?
I used to speak Indonesian, but obviously like you leave and you forget their language. Only Arabic and English.
Wow. And when did you start learning English?
When I came to New Zealand, man, it was a struggle.
Okay.
Especially going to school. Yeah, it was very tough. I think it was one of the toughest times we've had, you know, coming to a new place. Can't speak the language. You're at school, you're just sitting there. I hated school, by the way. Like I never, even since I was young, I never liked school.
Yeah, most kids don't, right? And then especially if you're like, I don't even speak the language. Because I've talked to numerous people from Mexico and other countries around here. And, you know, they have a similar, we have a what's called an ESL program. English is a second language. But still, I mean, you know, you're isolated from everybody else. They're trying to teach you.
Yeah.
Learning another language looks rough. And then on top of it, they're grading you. Exactly. It looks tough. And you don't know anybody.
Yeah, man, it was making friends. It was real, real tough. Like so tough when we're coming in.
So let me ask you this. So your brother who passed away, what had happened there? If you want to talk about it,
two weeks old. So my mom was pregnant in jail.
Okay.
Like when we got there, she was already pregnant. Yeah, so he passed away when he was 2 weeks old.
Okay.
I think he had water in the lungs or something like that. And they didn't know how to fix that, which hospitals are there a bit backwards, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, so my mom and dad went through this real, real rough patch, you know, where I think my mom couldn't speak for 1 month.
Yeah.
So we thought something actually happened to her, you know. And as young kids, you know, to see that, you're like, oh, what the hell is happening, you know?
Yeah. But
like for us to experience all this as we grew up younger, so it's tough. And that's why I see it now, you know, being in New Zealand and you get with all these opportunities and everything, it was like, man, this is easy, you know, it's like walking a park.
Yeah, I love that.
That's why a lot of people don't understand, like when I'm putting so much hard work into, like when I did my businesses, now I'm putting the same effort into the SMP in there. It's just they don't really understand your background, so they can't really tell why you're doing this or pushing so hard to be where you want to be.
And yeah, because you know,
people just see like the finished product, you know. Yeah.
So how did you eventually, it's you, your dad, your mom, your sister, is there any other relatives?
And my brother, yeah.
And okay.
So and me, so, my brother, and my sister.
Okay. Now this, the brother who passed away, or another brother?
No. So it was another brother.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And is he older?
And I've got a younger sister who was born here in New Zealand.
Okay.
Yeah.
During the process, so okay, that happens. Obviously, that's fucking terrible. Especially I see it from the parents' point of view now.
Yeah, for sure. What,
how do you eventually, so you get citizenship or semi, I don't know what they call it, temporary citizenship in Indonesia. How do you eventually leave Indonesia to the next move?
That's all the United Nations does that for you. So okay. United Nations comes, take you out, and then they take you to these different countries. It's the same what's happening with Syria at the moment, you know, like a United Nations goes and help them out from these camps that they live in. And some of these people living in these camps for like 5, 6, 7, 8 years, you know, on the waiting list. So like country says, you know what, we can take some refugees in, and then they kind of go through the waiting list. Who's been here the oldest? They take those out and transfer them to another country.
And so, okay.
That's how the process works, yeah.
When the United Nations does this, do they fly you? Do they give you any money? What do? They just put you in and they just say, hey, here you go.
They just fly you, man, and they take you to another country, and then you potentially hope that the country that they send you to help you out. And we are very grateful that New Zealand did help us out, because they did give us housing when we first got here, you know, and a little bit of income to just get us around before we start getting our feet and work and whatnot. And, you know, my dad was owning companies in Kuwait, like oil, when he was working there, coming to New Zealand, working in a restaurant, you know, as a cleaner and stuff. It's a bit, it's a shock, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go from there. So yeah, but hey, he had to do what he had to do for us to get by.
So your dad was like a businessman. He worked in the oil industry while you guys were in Iraq?
Yeah. Worked in Kuwait.
Wow. Kuwait.
Yeah, so you own a couple of multiple businesses there in the oil industry.
And then he came.
So we were living a good life. Like, we were living a good life in Iraq, you know. Obviously, with the wars and everything that was going on, you still live a good life, you know.
Yeah.
I think, and the one thing about people that don't realize about Middle East, especially Iraq, or then you got Iraq, Iran, Syria, those. Instant when you're born into a war. So yeah. You're not born into like, oh, there's. So for us to be born there with a war, like, it was just normal, like probably like a shopping center down the road blew up and we're like, oh, you know, they just blew up. Like, it's not like, oh shit, what the hell is going on? So it's like the norm. Sometimes you sleep at night and you hear like gunfires and shit going off like from far, far away. And it's like, oh, cool. It's like no one really, because you can't control it and you can't do anything about it.
I think the biggest, and I've heard this before, that it's crazy that you had to go through that and people live like that. But a big misconception with Americans, they think, hey, Iraq, Afghanistan, it's all like wars. It's just war and everybody there wants to kill the Americans, right? But really, it's just there's groups, I guess you call them gangs, whatever you want to call the terrorist groups. And there's just, and then the rest are just regular people who just want to go to
work. That's what it is. Yeah,
call
yeah,
vacation,
yeah.
Eat food, watch TV, hang out. You know, they're just normal people. And then you got the craziness going around them for the war.
Well, the media shows you, they don't really show you the place for what it is. They show you the wars and stuff happens usually on the edges, you know? And that's where everything happens. But I think our countries are cursed because we got so much oil and we wish we never did.
You don't think it was good?
I don't know. I don't think it's good for us, man. Like, I wish that place never had oil because we would probably wouldn't have to leave, you know?
But do you think it would have developed? But do you think it would have developed the way it is without all that money?
Man, it's not developed where it is at the moment either. With all this, it's a clang there. It's clangs. If you have a big family, you can survive. If you don't, you're not surviving there, man. I can tell you that for sure. Because everyone robs everyone there. You know, if you have a big family, big clang, you know, you're in the oil industry, you got real estate, and it's just it's a very complex place, you know. It's like a war jungle. The lion and the rest, you know, just feed off at the bottom. That's how it is. Yeah, it's a
it looks rough.
It's tough, man.
Yeah. No, I think about that sort of thing all the time. I'm like, we are so fucking... even though I was born in America, so I feel very lucky. And although I was born into kind of a shitty situation, but at least I was born into a shitty situation in the United States. You know what I mean? Versus situation in a really poor country. Because it would be way worse. It'd be way worse.
In America, you still have opportunities. Do you know what I mean? You can I can try and leave from this place to go to that place because it's got something.
Yeah. And it blows my mind the amount of people in the U.S. who waste their fucking opportunity. And that's what I still, at 36 years old, I can't get over it. I have so many acquaintances, friends, family, and I just like, we have an opportunity to make our dream a reality, and you fucking aren't doing, you're wasting your life. In my opinion, they're wasting their life.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you can't force somebody to want to get better, but someone like you who's come from a war zone, you've been in these prison camps and you know, seen terrible things and had to deal with a lot of loss, a lot of ambiguity, all this uncertainty. You appreciate the opportunities, and it seems like you've taken advantage of it. So once you get, now that you're in New Zealand, you start school, you start learning English. What was that like?
Yeah, once I started learning English, that was the most thing that I actually had to learn first. And my dad, one thing told us is like, don't hang out with your own kind. And now I look back at it and I'm like, what he said was right. Because I have some friends, like Iraqi friends, that we came together. When you speak English to them now, they feel like they just came yesterday because they never really wanted to expand into the culture. You know what I mean? They always stuck together. And the one thing my dad said, he's like, first thing you get here, you go find just whatever friends because you need to learn the language as the way they speak here, the native way. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, you know, but I think what helped me here was my soccer, because when I was playing in Iraq, you know, every single day you come out here and they only play two times a week. So I was running around these kids like no tomorrow. And they're like, oh, you know, where did this guy come? I couldn't speak English, but I knew how to play. So like, that's the way I kind of made friends.
So they were like, we want him on our team.
That's basically was it. And then that's when I met my best friend till this day, two of them, John and Hussein. We've been friends since we were kids, like when I first came to New Zealand, you know. And I remember when I got into a fight with this kid and Hussein came and jumped in and I was like, yeah, cool. We're best friends now.
Oh, that's great.
Hey, we've been friends since ever, man. Like we don't see each other as much, but when we do, it feels like yesterday.
I love that. I love that. I have friends from when I was 11 years old as well. It is. Yeah, man. It's great.
Those friends are hard to come by.
It is. It really is. And I really appreciate my friendships, those long-term. It's hard to make friends as an adult. I mean, you can, but we have more surface responsibilities.
Level. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So you're making friends. And so what was school like? I mean, did you finish? Did they just put you in like, I don't know, what is that? Fifth, sixth grade? Did they go to 12th grade?
Sir? Yeah, we go ESOL there. ESOL, I don't know what it's in America. So ESOL, it's like where they put you in this class with other refugees in there to teach you basic English.
Okay.
Like the alphabet order and all these stuff, like not one, two, three, like all these real basic stuff that you need to. I personally never really liked school. Like I always hated it. Like it's just sometimes my mom would drop me off to school and I would just walk out, literally go to the park and just play soccer. And then the teachers
skip school all day.
They're like, just skip. Just go play soccer. Like, that's all I wanted to do, just play. And that's how I think I made friends throughout my whole career. It was back just from sports.
Wow.
And being into, you know, and then went into playing high league in New Zealand until I got injured. Obviously, that was my goal to become a professional soccer player, but didn't go through. But yeah, school was something that I just didn't really look at it. I always looked at it this way. I was like, I think I clicked when I was a bit younger. And I was like, if the teacher teaching us, how come he's not rich? That's why I looked at it. And that stuck in my head since I was young, you know. And I was like, if they're teaching us all this, why are they not rich, you know? But then my friends went and did degrees and all this. And to be honest, a lot of them now don't even use their degrees, just, and they're stuck with this loan that they have to pay.
When you graduated, based on what you just said, you chose after high school, you chose not to go to college. What did you end up doing?
I just started doing random jobs, strawberry picking, sending frames, working like a supermarket. I just wanted to make money. And that's how I kind of looked at it. You know, for me, it was just making money because I didn't really understand all this, you know, education. And it was just not my thing. Like, I didn't really like it. Didn't want to study. None of that. My sisters and brother, yeah, they did study and then they got very good education. But I took the route of working to build myself. I actually went to uni for 1 week and I walked out. I was like, nah, it's not for me.
And so
everything is now where I am. It's all self-educated.
Wow. And you're a smart guy. Yeah. I mean, just by talking to you, you're a smart guy. So, I mean, yeah, no problem. When I think people like you and I, you have to be interested in it to really put your focus in. And if you're not interested, sure. You're like, I don't fucking care. I don't care.
Exactly. It just doesn't really, you're not going to get the best out of it if you don't really like it. No.
Yeah.
It's just like trying to force somebody to eat something, but they don't really want to eat it. Like, yo, I don't want to eat this.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Yeah. So when did you get into barbering? So how did you eventually get into the barber industry?
So when I did all these jobs, got into sales and all stuff, I have some cousins here who are barbers. You know, they've been doing it for so long. So I've always been around it, but I never really did it. You know what I mean? So I've always used to do my own beard and this, but I really never... I always wanted something different, you know, like I always searched for something that is going to fulfill me. And then one day my cousin was like, hey man, why don't you just give this a go? Just like, you know, try it out, see if you like it. And yeah, I ended up, so when I was doing sales at the time, I bought this like cheap clippers and I was like, oh, let me just like practice on my friends or whatever. And yeah, when I touched it, I was like, oh, this is actually pretty fun, you know? And since that day, it's just kind of like, I think barbering changed my whole life.
Wow.
Like changed my perspective on so many things. Because people before, they used to look down on, oh, if you're a barber and this. But then now, barber is like a doctor. You know, like they earn crazy money too. Like, you know, if I go back into it, I still earn a lot of money. But you meet interesting people. You get to talk to so many people who are all in different industries doing so many. So you get all this knowledge in 1 year. So it's like, why would I go to a university when I'm getting knowledge for free?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, since that day, I touched barbering and I fell in love with it, man. And now 13 years later, I never looked at waking up in the morning. Oh, no, just like, it's like normal going, hanging out with friends.
Wow. And did you study under your cousins or how did that all work?
Yeah. So I was self-taught. I was watching and as an apprentice, you know, sweeping floors at the start. I think for the first couple of months, we're just sweeping floors, watching them. And then now and then they'll give me one person to kind of do here and there. And I think that's how it kind of all starts before you get the rhythm of it and you understand it. But I was grateful too, because I was working in a shop. It was like six good barbers, you know. Mm-hmm. You pick so much of these guys who are super skilled. And I picked it up in no time.
I also taught myself barbering over years. But I never got to work in a shop like you. I just
been
hair, you know, since I was like 14. Still cut hair, you know, doing SMP and I cut my father-in-law's hair and some other.
Yeah, yeah, nice.
True. And I've always liked it as well. I just like doing it. You know what I mean? I like doing it. I like making people happy. You give a good haircut, people are happy. You know, they feel
exactly.
Good.
Exactly. It's the experience. And you create a lot of friendship with it too. I mean, even when I got into it, I had a goal in mind. I was like, I don't want to just be barbering, working for somebody. You know, I was like, in 2 years, I want to own my own business. And then 2 years down the track, I did end up opening up my own business.
Fuck yeah.
Worked for it, build it up. And then I was like, okay, what's the next big goal? And I ended up becoming an ambassador for Wall as well, which is one of the biggest brands in the
world.
Yeah,
I know. What, you got an ambassador? Yeah. Wow, that's hard. People who don't know that is hard. That's hard to do.
Yeah, so it took me a while, but and I was actually the first one in New Zealand to get it too.
Wow.
It was crazy. And the guy that I worked with at the barbershop, he stayed continuing doing barbering tour now, and then he just became an ambassador for Wall recently.
And so, yeah, so when you I guess you opened your first barbershop first, right? So how did that work? You were like, hey, I'm leaving, I'm just going to open up this barbershop. And did it start a beast?
Things didn't really go as planned, you know. The thing is when I do things, I tell the person straight away from the start. So when it gets the time for me to leave or anything, they're not surprised, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not shocking them.
Yeah, you're trying to be an honest guy.
Yeah. So when in 2 years, they thought I'm gonna just stay there forever. And I was like, no, like, my time is up now, I need to go. And then obviously got very salty about it. Till this day, we actually don't speak, by the way.
Yeah, shame.
Yeah. So when I got into it, I didn't understand business. Like, now you're going into a business, you're not a worker anymore. Do you know what I mean? Because you're different now. Like, you have the skill, but you don't have the business skill of what's actually happening. So I went deep balls in the business. I didn't really know what I was doing. Didn't know what the hell is an accountant. Like, obviously my mom is an accountant, but in Iraq it's different than in New Zealand laws. That's a lot different. I didn't know what taxes was. So I was like, what the hell is that? Like, you know, everything's done for you when you work for people.
Yeah.
A lawyer, and then you have to do contracts. But I came across a guy who I was cutting his hair. You know, and then he's like, hey man, you need to be doing this. And I was like, what the fuck? I don't know any of this shit. He's like, yeah, well, you need to register the business before getting this. And I actually did all these mistakes as I was going, building their first business. And then, you know, went through it, understood. And then once he started getting the rhythm of what's actually going on, I ended up opening up my second one. That was a lot smoother than the first one. But yeah, like, fast forward now, like, understanding all these taxes, accountings, lawyers, bank accounts, all these things that I had to obviously teach myself, you know, by reading all these books, all the differences that you go through. And I said, that's all self-taught, so you don't really have to go to university for that.
Yeah, and I'm sure you research things that actually matter, not the bullshit class.
Exactly.
And I'm sure
because that's day-to-day life. You know, you're actually doing it in real life. You're not doing it by going by a book that's been studied by hundreds of students.
Yeah. You're living, actually in the field doing the real work, not just theory.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I'm sure if you had accounting questions, you could just ask your mom, right? She'd help you with that.
Yeah, so she was good with the numbers. So every time I needed something, it's like, what does this mean?
It's great to know people who know shit.
Oh, bro, I'm telling you, the barbering, trust me, you get to meet so many people.
Yeah, you really, and even in SMP, right? I mean, I just met so many people.
It's the same, you know?
Yeah. You can ask for favors if needed. I'm saving them. You know what I mean? In case I actually need it.
Yeah.
I don't, because you don't want to be the guy who's a pain in the ass asking for handouts favor. But if called upon, sure. I know who to reach out to.
Well, I came through Bitcoin through my barbershop.
Really?
That's how I knew about Bitcoin.
Okay.
Like, I had guys who are like working cyber securities. And they were my clients for so long. And then they're like, oh, do you know about Bitcoin? I was like, nah, man. So every time they come for a haircut, they'll teach me something about it.
Oh, wow.
Or teach me something new.
What year did you get in? Did you get into Bitcoin?
Went four or 5 years now. 4 years, okay. 5 years.
Nice.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So quite some time. Yeah.
Good.
So I've been hodling since.
Good. That's a little play for people who don't know. Hodling, it looks like hold, but it's... HODL, not HOLD, and it's just there's a coin called HODL, HODL. It's just a dumb crypto joke, but I get it. So when did you eventually say, hey, you know, I've been barbering, you know, 13 years, I want to get into SMP? Well, I imagine you got into it sooner.
Yeah, so I've always looked I want, after barbering, like, I came to the phase where I like, okay, I really need to do something different. You know, like, I've been doing this for so long, I need to just like find. So while my business was running, I was still putting my foot in some places, you know, like real estate, other different industries that I see if, oh, okay, if this is going to fulfill me, if it's something for me. I did real estate for a couple of months. I didn't really like it, to be honest. I understood so much about it, but it's a very cunning job, and that's something I don't really want to go into. You get to see the real industry when you're inside, not the outside people think it's the cars and this and all that. It's more than that. And traveled around actually for like going to Asia, went to Europe, got onto that show. I thought that's something going to fulfill me, which it really, it did. Something came out great out of it, but didn't really give me something that I want to be doing in the future. And then one time my mate came over and he was like, and I started looking at him. I was like, man, you look a bit like, I've seen S&P before. Don't get me wrong. I've seen it because everything that comes straight comes from America. So you kind of see what's happening in America and then it gets distributed to other countries. And when I first saw it, like the full straight hard line dark, and I was like, man, this looks funny. Like, this is not something like people actually getting this.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, one time my mate came and then he didn't say anything, obviously. And I looked at him and I was like, dude, you look a bit different. I couldn't pick it up straight away. And then he's like, oh, you don't notice? And I was like, nah, not really. Like, I was like, what the, like, have you done something to your hair? Cause he's bald. Like, that's why I'm like, he's like, yeah, man, I've this thing keep popping up on my pages, S&P stuff. And I was like, what the fuck is that? Like, and he showed me a photo and I was like, oh, I've seen this before. But the way his one was done was actually done nicely. So it looked natural, you know? Uh-huh. I was like, oh. And then that's how I kind of got into it. I start searching. I was like, fuck, who's doing it in New Zealand? And by the way, I've only been doing it for 6-7 months now. So
wow. A lot
of people think I've been doing it for quite some time. I was like, no.
Good for you.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah, yeah. And I came a lady who actually, Abby, her name. I looked her up and I thought it was a studio and I ended up going to this house. And I was like, okay, I'm maybe in the wrong spot. And then there was a sign says Abby S&P and ain't S&P. And I went, knocked on the door. She thought I was a client coming for a consultation. Uh-huh. And I was like, hey, I'm coming here to, because my friend where he did it, the guy's not here. It's from Australia.
Okay.
So I wasn't going to go to Australia to learn it, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, surely there's somebody here. And I ended up knocking on her door. And then I was like, hey. And she was like, hey, how can I help you? And I was like, oh, I'm coming to learn S&P. She's like, well, I've never taught anybody before. And I don't usually do this. And I was like, well, whatever it takes, I want to learn this. I don't really care. I could just come here every day and knock on your door till you actually say, I'm going to teach you. But yeah, man, she really opened up the gate for me. And you know, I told her my dreams and what I really want to do. And then when I first touched the machine gun and what I was doing, it gave me the same feeling that I had when I was when I started barbering.
Wow.
I kind of found S&P.
What's her?
Abby. Abby from Headline Inc.
Headline. Okay. Abby.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So her background is makeup artist.
Okay.
And then she got into S&P through, and I think she learned it over in the state. I can't remember who she went through. But yeah, she learned that over there. And I believe it was her and some other guy was the only one doing it in New Zealand. There was nobody else doing it.
Okay.
And now there are a few people who are doing it. But yeah, I just went and knocked on her door.
Just showed up.
I just said, hey, I just literally showed up, knocked on her door. And I was like, hey, I want to learn this.
How far is she from you?
Oh, she's not far, man. She's about 20 minutes from where I stay.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you weren't traveling. Yeah, so okay.
No. Because I had to search. I was like, okay, I live in Auckland. So Auckland is like the main base of New Zealand. That's where everything's happening.
Okay.
Over here, it's easy because if I want to go to the North Shore, it's 30 minutes. West, 20 minutes. So everything is not super far. So it's kind of good, very convenient. And yeah, I just walked in and she was like, well, I never taught anybody SMP. She's like, I don't know how I'm going to teach you this skill. And I was like, whatever it takes. I don't really care how you're going to structure this for me. I want to do it. She was like, give me 2 weeks. And I was like, okay. I was like, from 2 weeks till I see you again, how can I just do something? So I ended up coming home, getting a pen. I had this little bottle thing. I pierced it into it. It looked like a machine gun. And I just started doing, like, you know, dots, sending it to her every day. She was like, oh, you need to be doing this. You need to be doing that. Spread this out. Bring this closer. And I was like, okay. So I was just doing that every single day before I kind of meet her.
Wow. Wow. So you're so very dedicated. You were very – you paid her, I'm assuming, too, right?
Of course. Yeah, yeah, okay, man. Of course, okay. I paid her. Like, I see her. I mean, I've got a folder this much, probably this big, of how much work I've done, which I haven't really showed anybody yet. That's how many, probably. It's crazy how much training I've done before even touching somebody's skin.
I think that's probably the best way to do it. And looking at your work, you would never know. You said you only been doing this like 6 months. Your work looks good, man.
6 months, yeah.
Your work six looks months, good. Man, yeah. The practice definitely, it shows. It shows.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I've had guys, a couple of people from Team Micro as well reached out. They're like, oh, you know, we've seen that you've been doing this. How long have you been doing it for? I was like, oh, 6 months. And like, well, I thought you were doing a couple of years. I was like, nah, man.
That's
I've got
good.
Guys from Italy as well reaching out, you know, which I'm very grateful for, helping them out as well. I mean, I was grateful to meet Joe, you know.
Yeah.
It just happened. And to pick that knowledge from him in that 2 weeks, man, like my whole shift and technique, everything just shifted straight away.
Man, you're getting trained by one of the best.
Bro, I'm telling you. And it's crazy because with SMP, it's very, what do you call it? It's very closed. So as an artist, for example, you know yourself, you're in, by yourself in your own zone. So you don't get other artists coming and watching you the whole time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people don't really see the work. So when I saw Joe's work in real life, and I was like, damn, man, this guy's like literally, you're not hiding anything. You know what I mean? You're not doing this Photoshop and anything like that. This guy's like a real.
Yeah, Yusuf is one of the best in the US, one of the best in the world, for sure. He's a fucking beast.
It was like straight raw footage I was looking at, and I was like, jeepers. Like, he had guys there coming from Turkey, all over the place, by the way,
yeah.
When I was there. Yeah, just traveling for him to do it. And I was like, so you can see the levels of how far you can take SMP, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
So there are levels to it, yeah.
So many levels. There's some, and then you got the people who just watch YouTube videos and try it, and then they jack somebody's head up.
That's a lot of it in Iraq, by the way. I've seen some procedures there, like videos. It's crazy. Like sad. It's actually so sad to see it.
It is, and people. Well, it's expensive, right? I mean, the cheaper you go, the cheaper work you're going to get, right? In the beginning,
well, there's a say. It's called. There's a difference between cost and price, and they ask what's the difference. A cost is an ongoing thing. A price you pay at one time.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people don't think. It's like, okay, you can get it cheap, but I think there'll be laser treatments, this before you get to the actual
the cost is never ending, right? You just keep
that's it
all jacked up. Now, it looks like you have a lot of hair. Do you actually have any SMP or no?
No, but eventually I will be getting some. I don't really need it at the moment.
No, I don't think you do.
I feel my temples, but for now, I'm good. For now.
And
I'm
in your earlier pics, your hair was longer, so you recently kind of cut it?
I shaved it. I thought it would be great for my business because that can give more
smart
confidence
move
to guys coming in through. You know, I had this long hair, and I'm like, they're coming in with no hair. I was like, oh, that doesn't make sense. Yeah. So I ended up buzzing the whole thing off.
Yeah, and you can get... Like I talked to Jesse Lima. He's a well-known artist down in Florida. I'm not sure how much you've been looking at all the artists around the world, but Jesse
has. To be honest, sorry to cut you off. To be honest, the only people I follow, it's you. I follow Joe,
mm-hmm.
Sam from Oliver Mayer, Ronnie, Ronnie was actually the earliest guys that I spoke to as well when I got into SNP. I don't know if you know him from
MHP
from Holland.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Ronnie's a beast.
This guy is a beast.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we were speaking just last night actually. So these are the type of these are the guys that I follow and I just stick to that because if you follow too many, it becomes you're like, oh well, where am I gonna go? Which niche market? So you kind of cut target nice people, keep those and just stick with that.
I know exactly what you mean. And you're just trying to focus, build your brand, right? You, in the beginning, you just kind of want to build your brand. And you'll see there's characters in the SMP. I would probably define myself.
I've seen already.
Yeah. Yeah, there's different personalities, right? People, everybody does things a little different. There's no like, I guess in the bar, I've talked about this, the barber community, there was a, I guess, a National Institute of Barbers or something like that. We don't have that in SMP and even tattooing.
No, that's what it's lacking. Yeah.
Yeah. There's
and,
no,
and I think it's something you can't really do unless you're going to do events or be in an event and kind of connect with these people.
Are you but coming in reality, to, go ahead.
But I'm saying in reality, it's still an individual business that you're one-on-one with your client. That's it.
100%. Yes, you are so right. At the end of the day, you can learn from the best. You can learn from the best, but unless you practice, guess what? When you're alone, one-on-one with a bald person, it's you.
Exactly.
What you've practiced before they were there, that's going to make the difference.
Sure.
You know, all that for knowledge. Sure. And, you know, when I first did it, I remember my hand shaking. You know, I was so nervous. You know what I mean? Like the needle and everything was shaking before. Fuck up, because you feel I feel horrible. You know, if you really and we in the beginning you make mistakes. That's completely normal. But
everybody does.
Yeah, and but the better, the more you do it, the better you get. And you at least you should get better if you're paying attention to what you're doing. Because there's probably I'm sure people who just keep fucking heads up. You know, they just keep jacking for people sure, up man. And they don't even try. To me, I'm a student. Yeah. I'm a forever student. I've been doing it 6 years. I'm still a student. Still learning.
For sure, man.
Still learning.
Always be a student. And that's how I look at it. Always be a student.
Are you going to the Meeting of Minds? It's in Times Square. It's in New York.
I got invited to it actually, but I was like, I just got back from Dubai. I was like, man, it'll be an expensive trip to just come back.
It is. Yeah. So my advice is I think we're going to have a scalp show. So the more research you'll do there. So in 2021, there was the first, I'd say real, Scalp Expo, which was hosted by Picasso Jeff, if you know Picasso Jeff. So he's did
I've
that
heard of Picasso, yes.
And so he did, and his is in it was in Phoenix, Arizona. So I went to that September 2021. Then about 9 months later, there was another Scalp Expo. This is 2022, May 2022. He did Scalp Expo too, but at the same time, like literally the second half of the week, there was the Scalp Show, which is Matt Aiello's brand, which is Scalp Micro USA. And he hosted that. And now ever since that, because those were so close together and there was like, you can't have shows that far apart because it is expensive and it takes you away and you got to fly there. You got to pay for the hotel. You got to pay for it's a lot.
For sure, man.
And now there hasn't been one. So now, you know, Team Micro Meeting of the Minds is coming. I'm probably going to go because I'm just taking a train. I'm actually doing all the marketing. They haven't announced it yet. They want me to do all the marketing. So it's only two hours away from me up in New York. But
oh, easy.
The point I'm trying to get to is they're Matt Aiello, when I did the podcast with him and John Giroux, said he's probably going to have another scalp show. Hopefully it's in 2025, not 2026, but you got to go to that one. So when that
next one I am for sure to that one. But this one was just like I was like,
yeah, too crammed in.
Too expensive for me. Yeah, too crammed in.
And New York,
but the next one for sure, man.
The last one was in Vegas. And you know, Vegas is also a little bit cheaper, I'd say. And it's more spread out. New York, everything is very congested. You know, and it's small and expensive. And but
that's gonna
So what are the sales like out in New Zealand? I mean, is your biggest challenge the marketing, just getting the word out there?
To be honest, now I feel like for me, what I'm doing, a lot of people are reaching out to me. Like this whole month I'm kind of booked out.
Oh, congrats.
And a lot of the new artists who learn from other places as well, reaching out to me now, or like, how can we? And I was like I said, man, you got, end of the day, it's your business. It's you that you have to put in the effort and work to be out there in people's faces. I don't just do marketing. I'm always, you know, at the gym talking to people. I see a bald guy, I'm like, I just walk up to him, you know, just like, hey, what's up, man? Like, you know, just have that conversation, build a relationship before I can tell him, hey, I do SMP. But I think it, for me, it's good. I don't really, you know, I had a good marketing team. I met a guy in Dubai, which now runs my marketing as well.
Wow.
And he's been real great since I've been back. You know, they,
what company, in case people are interested?
So it's himself that does it. His name is Said. Anybody that would want to potentially want a marketing agency or anything, hit me up. I'm more than happy to help you guys with that as well. And he's real beast with it, man. When I came here, like I've had, just before coming, I've had 53 inquiries come through my email, which I never had that before, by the way.
Holy shit. Yeah.
I was doing my own thing, you know, like as just anybody else. But these guys, like, kind of beasts at what they do. They, you know, they target people's emotions, what drives them into the whole confidence thing. And I was like, trust me, sometimes when doing that, you pay a little bit from what you're earning to this, it just helps you so much. Like, I don't really have to worry about that anymore, you know? Oh, damn, I have to wake up, do marketing. This, like, that's taken care of now.
I agree. I'm in that boat. I've had marketing companies. I haven't been able to get someone to get me 53 leads.
It's a hit and miss, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing with them, they don't really get you the lead come through straight away. They qualify them before coming to you.
Okay, so they filter out the bullshit? So
they filter out the bullshit, get qualified, and then you get the guys there.
And that's what we want.
And that's what we want as well. At the same time, I feel like a lot of people still don't understand what SMP is. Some of them think still it's a hair transplant. Is my hair going to grow? And that's why I kind of like doing these small videos, because to educate whoever's coming into my page. Just to cut that out, that it's like, hey, this is not going to grow anymore. You know, that hey, there's no hair coming out. It's just an illusion of giving you hair.
I get that question all the time. Is my hair going to grow? Which is good. That means it looks like hair. It means it looks like hair. Yeah. It means we tricked them.
For sure.
That's what, yeah. I'll give you a little tip that I do, because I get, because all the leads I get, they'll call me and I'm like, eventually get to the point, it's like, you copy and paste basically a generic message back to them.
For sure.
You know, because like, I'm not going to sit there and repeat it. You might change the name in the text message or whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But I always say, because you'll run into this if you haven't already, there's a lot of guys who will come in and they're in denial about their hair loss. So I'll talk to them on the phone without seeing any pictures or anything. They're like, yeah, I just got like a little bit of a receding hairline, you know? And then I'm like, okay. Then they come in and it's like their whole top of their head, they got like 25 hairs on top. I'm like, bro, come on. Have you looked at that? So what I say now is like, I want to make sure you're a candidate. Really what I'm doing is I want you to realize how much hair loss you really got, because I want to bring that pain, right? I want you to feel the pain of the hair loss. So I say, take a picture of the top of your head in good lighting and send it to me. I want to see if you qualify for SMP, right?
You're the right fit for SMP.
Yeah. And really what I'm doing is I'm forcing that person to look at the top of their bald head. Because it is so many people, it's like out of sight, out of mind. I'm like, motherfucker, it's all gone. You got, you know, 35 hairs, you know?
I had a guy yesterday, bro, and he's like, okay, will I get SMP? And I was like, send me a photo. His whole thing is gone, and he has like a little ponytail in the back. And I was like, dude,
cut that, you gotta
shave
that.
Like, I ain't doing SMP on that. Like, what? It's not gonna even look like what you want it to look like.
I know. If you could get that guy, man, do a video of you cutting it off. Say, don't cut it, I'll cut it. You know what I mean? It'll be a good clip. It'll be a good video.
Oh, for sure. There's a lot of videos that go viral.
What's it like? I saw you had the jade needles. Is it hard for you to get SMP products out in New Zealand?
No. You can actually just get them.
Just get them delivered. There's no issue.
Just shipping-wise, probably take about a week and a half. Okay. About a week and a half. But yeah, that's why you kind of like stack your things up before.
Buy in bulk.
buy in bulk here before, like, in case you run out or something. But man, I went through so many different needles.
Okay.
Just to try out, to see which impressions, which ones are nice. And you get some needles that just after a couple of, you know, say 10 minutes and they start leaking, you know, and it's like, oh man, I really...
Don't get me started.
But I found the nicest one, and to be honest, hands down, even though I'm not sponsored by nobody or anything like that, I could hands down probably say the 5 p.m.
Really? Okay. The 5 p.m.
Yeah, they're really, really, really
Shout out
sharp.
John Chandler.
Yeah, man. Hey, if you want to support us, help us out. But to be honest, they stay consistent. Like at one procedure, I used one needle for the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah, they stay consistent. They're very sharp. And I feel like the type of steel they're probably using, it's real high quality. They don't really leak or anything like that. So you get the impression consistent throughout the whole way. Other stuff, like I said, I tried them, you know, it's annoying when they start leaking and it's like, oh,
yeah.
Or it doesn't
show up, right? You do like 10, 20 hits and you're like, why the hell isn't anything coming out?
Yeah, you start getting like some hits, some like, it's like, well, what's going on here?
Or like a splatter.
At 5 p.m. Yeah. 5 p.m. for sure, man. Then they stay consistent. I've also used Anthony's one, the 2RLs.
Okay.
The 2RLs are very, very sharp.
Who is that? Who makes that?
Anthony, I can't remember this page by head.
Okay.
But his name is Anthony. Yeah, so he came up with the 2RLs. And not many people use them. I believe Ronnie uses them quite a lot. So he's like a master at the 2RLs.
Okay.
Because they're very super sharp. And if you don't know how to use them, create blowouts like crazy.
Yeah.
And I believe they're really nice, probably for the hairlines. Super, super fine.
Okay. Making that little line.
Yeah.
Did you and what machine do you use?
So I jumped around. I was using the Mast first, then I went to the Bishop.
Okay.
And then I stopped using the Bishop. Now I went to the Mast because Joe was like, hey, use this Mast, the wireless one, the small one.
I use the Mast too. I use the Dragon Hawk.
Oh, the Dragonhawk? Okay, yeah.
That's what I use.
I've got they got the new one. I can't remember by the top of my head, but it's real nice and light, you know. It gives you a nice hit as well. And the great thing about it is when you finish, your hand's not feeling sore. Yeah. I was feeling that with the Bishop, you know, like they're a bit heavy.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're sitting there 3 hours or something on working on a client, more than that.
You want light. You want it to be light.
Tired. Yeah. Your hands start becoming tired, fatigued, and you're like, okay, I don't want to do that.
I agree. What are your socials, Amudi? And what is your do you have a website?
Yeah, so it's smpbyhamudi.com and my Instagram as well, smp.byhamudi. And TikTok as well, which I'm not so big at the moment on it. I'm building portfolio before I start posting on TikTok, and also YouTube Shorts.
Okay,
got a couple of videos up there. So I think once I have so many,
is your YouTube SMP by Hamudi?
Yeah, SMP by Hamudi as well. But once I build a lot of content in my Instagram, that's what I'm focusing on at the moment. My website and my Instagram. Then I'll start probably pushing more towards the TikTok and YouTube Shorts.
I'm not even know. I mean, I have one follower on TikTok, and it's only because it's a guy who convinced me to get on TikTok. Because I have, I mean, you see, I got like 300 videos, right? And I just put them on there, and I don't. I'm paranoid. I like Chinese government's getting everything on my phone. I'm a paranoid person, so I actually have a separate phone for TikTok. So here's my phone. Then I have another phone for TikTok, and I just schedule the post. I don't even get on.
Because with TikTok, it's the algorithm. Yeah, the algorithm is crazy. Like, you could get one video that go crazy viral, and you're like, "Oh shit!" You know, you just don't know. That's the thing with TikTok. Yeah, it's not like maybe you get clients. Who knows? But I think it's good to be out there and your face is everywhere.
The more, here's my philosophy on that. Is it's a good point, and we'll wrap it up after this. I think the more people might know you, right? You're familiar, your face is familiar, they see you, it builds rapport with them. And when you build the rapport with that person, the potential client, they feel like they know you. When they feel like they know you, they're more likely to come to you. You know what I mean?
For sure.
So I just think, you know, one of the biggest mistakes I made when starting out was for 2.5 years, I never showed my face, just my work. And I'm making up for it. I'm making up for it because now you see me all the time. I don't shut up.
That's how you got to do it, man. Why not? You know, if you want to be out there, you got to show yourself.
Hey, truly an incredible story, Hamoudi. Thank you for sharing it. We'll be talking again. Hopefully we could do a collaboration. For sure. And stay on. Daddy.